This is the one I've been waiting for, because this is where it began for me. Not the journey, but uncovering the language that has helped me understand better what God has been doing in my life for the past 25 years. Actually, what he was trying to do in the whole of my life, but I managed to ignore him for 40 years. Not trying to, not wanting to, but not understanding how he works. I missed the things he wanted me to see, and only in the last 25. As we said last week, a loveless world is a sightless world. So the more I've learned to live inside the love of the Father, the more I've recognized the voice that I've been ignoring and the freer I've been to follow it. And that's led me to amazing places. The phrase was in the Message. It doesn't quite read the same way in our English translations, other ones, but I'll look at that too in a moment. The story is in John 7. Jesus is being encouraged by his brothers to go up to the feast, and Jesus is reticent to go to Jerusalem at this time because he's so hated and they're looking for a reason to kill him, and it's not his time. He's not afraid of the dying. He just knows it's not time to go, so he's going to go up more surreptitiously behind the scenes and spend some time there. But they were kind of pressing him to go, so Jesus came back at them. This is in the Message. Don't crowd me. This isn't my time. It's your time. It's always your time. You have nothing to lose. The world has nothing against you, but it's up in arms against me. It's against me because I expose the evil behind its pretensions. Now take that phrase right there. I expose the evil behind its pretensions. And don't just think about that being the world as the away team for those of us who are Christians. Of course, we would never need that. No, that's exactly what Jesus does. Jesus exposes the evil. I know when we start talking about evil, we think of murderers and rapists and the worst kind of people in the world, and we go down that road. I don't think that's what he means here. Here's how the New American Standard translates this. Jesus said to them, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always opportune. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it, that its deeds are evil." So it's kind of not quite saying it the same way, but the same underlying truth is there. When I read this, I exposed the evil behind its pretensions. I just, like a flash of light went off in my soul, and I could just say, man, that is the ministry of Jesus. Everybody around him, they've got religious illusions, they've got political illusions, they've got all kinds of illusions going on, or pretensions, similar word. And Jesus is coming and talking about what's true. They're trying to trip him up on a political question of should the Israelites pay taxes to a pagan government. And he kind of trips them up by going back to what's real. Hey, render to Caesar what's Caesar's, to God's what's God's. Let's not put the two kingdoms in conflict when we don't have to. Not that way, not when it inures to our benefit. And when he says evil, what he's saying is this is the way evil works. Evil works through illusion. It works through pretension. So if you are going into a situation and you believe something to be true that isn't true, and you're reacting and responding out of that pretension, then things will not go well for you. I mean, they may go well in the world because the world lives by that. But it won't go well in terms of your life and your freedom to live deeply in Christ. And when Jesus says he exposes the evil, he exposes what darkness is up to. Why do you believe the lies you do? You believe them probably because of some personal comfort they bring to you. Okay, well, the comfort, and that makes sense, but there's an evil that lurks in living the lie, even if you don't know it's a lie. Even if you think you're dead on right, and you're following it, and what Jesus does, what he says here is he comes to expose that. I thought of it immediately when I read it, of God, you know, poking holes in our illusions and helping us to see that what the thing I'm believing is not going to serve me well because it's not real. It's like Jesus saying to the disciples when they started fighting over who could be first in the kingdom, you know, let's be first or second. I'm sitting right and your left, James and John, they're the guys doing that. And Jesus said, in the translation, it didn't come out real well. In Greek, what he's actually saying is it's not a thing. The hierarchy of leadership is not a thing. It's not real in God's kingdom. And so when you're haunted by your need to be first, your need to be better, your need to be superior, you're living an illusion. And so when he says it's not real, it's not a thing. The greatest among you will be the servant of all. So it's not even a thing. And when he pokes that to the guys who are trying to get first and second, the poking isn't fun. Most of the illusions God's poked in my life, they're not fun. But if you can embrace what's true, remember that little progression I gave you a week or so ago? Behold, believe, and follow. You can't believe until you behold. Beholding him, learning to recognize him, his majesty, his beauty, his glory in the earth, even if that comes through another person, because you're not seeing it with your own eyes yet. Beholding him is a predecessor to believing in him. Because if you know him and you know his heart for you and you know he's for you and he's not poking at your pretensions because he wants to make your life miserable, he's poking at your pretensions because he wants you to live in the freedom of what's true and what's real. Instead of living in the illusions of darkness that work evil into our hearts and serve the kingdom of darkness rather than the kingdom of light. That's why Jesus is called the light of the world. Where Jesus is, light is. But not everybody loves the light. And that's what he's saying. The world hates the light. And the fleshy side of Wayne also hates that light. It's not my first thing to go, oh, whoopee, God, thank you for sharing that with me. I shared the story often of my co-pastor's betrayal that started this journey for me. And that little thought running through my head, I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. That's simply God poking a hole in my illusion, because part of me says, I've got to win this. This is salary, this is money, this is reputation, this is health insurance, this is everything. I've got to win this. And there's this nagging little thought in my heart that kept being underscored. As much as I tried to run from it, I couldn't. Sarah loved it when she first heard it. I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. It wasn't a command. It wasn't, you must walk away. It was simply, I have more down this road. And all my arguments are, I don't want to go down. I don't know it's Jesus. I just think it's a thought in my head, and it's a thought I don't like. So I'm trying to find, for 4 days, I'm trying to find a way around that simple reality. And God kept inviting me back to it. That simple obedience led to other opportunities and other obediences. Another thing that came shortly in that same process, wanting to, because I've been someone that's served my reputation most of my life, that I've wanted to be important. I want other people to think well of me. And so my next thought is, I'm being lied about. How do I deal with that? And God just asks me, and this was, again, a thought that was in my head, a persistent thought that hung around for a while. Now, when I first heard that invitation, I actually liked it because I thought, oh, man, God's going to nail Hyde. Man, if God's going to defend me, I'm all in. But God didn't say he would defend me. He just said, well, you trust it to me. And I didn't know he wanted to kill it. But in a few weeks' time, it began to become clear. You're not going to do anything about this, are you? You're going to let me be lied about. You're going to let people think I had an affair. I'm not out there. I didn't write a letter. Well, actually, I wrote some letters, but I never mailed those letters. I mean, there's everything in Wayne wants to defend himself against the lies that are being told to discredit me. And he just says, look, can you trust it to me? And I can't tell you how many times in prayer and just wandering around the planet and thinking, driving somewhere, the thoughts of me, can you trust it to me? I don't want to trust it to you. I'd like to do it myself. Thank you. I recognize that in my young grandkids when I would rather do it myself. This is where transformation happens. I know we don't like to think about it that way because we just like, you know, transformation is kind of a magical thing. I just read my Bible and pray and suddenly I will think differently and live differently. And I'm not saying there doesn't come transformation from that, but in reading the Bible, in praying, in talking to other people, in fellowship, in whatever, it's those moments when God makes something clear. He pokes a hole in our pretension and invites us on a different journey. And it's not always easy to go, is it? Sometimes it's just, I don't want to do that. I remember how I've argued so much with the things that God's poked holes in for me. We've joked about that. I have, because it's not a joke. It's real for me. And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free, but it will mess with you first. And that's because, gosh, I like the way I live. I like the way of thinking about how I live. I like my thoughts about things. I think I'm pretty wise in my arrogant sense of whatever is the, even a fleshy dude back in the day, and even fleshy elements today. I want what I want. And when I'm invited to think differently, think outside that box to do something, my first response is not, oh, whoopee-ki-yay, this will be fun. It's, oh, please, let's not do that. It's Dave Coleman saying to me one day, don't you think that's the most manipulative sermon you've ever taught? And I didn't think it was. I thought it was fabulous, but here's a different road. Now, do you want to go down that road? Do you not want to go down the road? What if I hadn't listened to that? Just nudging of the Spirit saying, I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. What if I fought for my place there? What if I'd gotten it back? What if I was the pastor and I'd got rid of the subversive elements in that group of people and exposed the lies they told? What would have happened? Would God have still been with me? Yes. Would God be loving me? Yes. Would I have learned what I learned if I didn't go down that road? I mean, it's not that he would have stopped trying. This is the amazing thing about God. He doesn't just give us one shot at something and say, oh, you missed it. Too bad. He's going to keep coming back. He's going to circle back. There'll be other opportunities to come. But the lessons are down that road. I'm telling you, most of what my life is today would not have not only not happened, but I wouldn't think the way I think today because he had more to teach me down this road. Could I stay on the road I was on? I think I could. Would I have been loved? Yes. Would God still have wanted to teach me things? Yes. Might there have come another moment as climactic where a hard decision might have been made? Possibly. Would I have made it, not made it? I look back before this element 25 some odd years ago. So many times Jesus was poking a hole in my illusion and I got my band-aids up and bandaged that hole right up again. Whoa. I don't want to go. I don't want to think that way. Because that's too challenging. It's too threatening. This is the essence of what salvation is. When John says at the end of his book, John 20:21, I have written these things so that you'd believe that Jesus is the Christ and by believing have life in his name. Some of you heard me talk about this because we changed that all to if you believe that Jesus is the Christ, that's creedal. You got to believe the creeds. You got to believe that Jesus is Christ, the Son of the living God, and you got to confess it with your mouth. And if you do, you're saved. You've got to believe that in terms of agreeing with the doctrine that Jesus is the Savior of the world or Jesus is the Christ. But then it says, and by believing that, you'll have life in his name. And I remember at my worst moments in faith as a legalistic religious guy, which I didn't see myself as that. I saw other traditions. There's more legalistic traditions than we were. Our legalism was far more subtle. But for its subtlety, we missed it. So for its subtlety, all the more captive. But I remember saying, God, I'm believing you. I have faith in you. Why am I not having life? Why is everything going bad? Why is it dark? Why do I hurt? Why won't you fix it? And what this is saying is not, this is not a statement of salvation. This is a statement of, hey, when you believe that Jesus is the Christ, which is what? That he is all, knows all, Lord of all. And when the light comes into your life and challenges you, you embrace it by believing him. Now, let's take that down to circumstance. Just like the one where I'm leaving the fellowship that I was a part of and was kind of forced out and didn't fight my way back in. I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. Now, I could, like I said, fought my way back in. I didn't have to walk away. There was no requirement to. But here's where salvation is. If I'm looking at this in a real way, and Jesus is saying, just poking the hole of, you know, Wayne's going to fight for himself, defend what's wrong. As somebody said, you are our apostle and you abandon us. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I had all the same thoughts myself. But what Jesus was saying is, I have more to teach you if you walk away. And for some reason, I wanted to learn what that something more was. And I tell you, it's one of the best decisions I ever made. So when I believe what's true, I have life in his name. That's not circumstantial. It doesn't mean all the circumstances go my way. Everything's great, hunky-dory. What it's saying is, man, the life of God living, coursing through our veins is no matter what situation we're in, we're believing him, what he's revealing, what he's showing us. I'm believing that. And where I believe that, I have life. And where I don't believe it, and I'm stuck in some lie, some illusion, some Wayne's attempt to get what Wayne wants, I'm dying there. That's where the dying comes. It's not that Jesus doesn't love us and doesn't want to invite us into something real, but the inviting is very real. The inviting is not, hey, be part of my religion, follow my rules. Transformation doesn't come by reading the Bible, creating this code of conduct from the scriptures and ethics, and then trying to make yourself live up to those things. That will wear you out, man, because we're not good enough to do that. We're not strong enough. You might do it for a week or two, month or two, but eventually it'll wear out and it'll blow up in your face because we're not made to do it that way. Jesus just wants to come alongside us, behold. And in the beholding, come to know. And then when we know him and he begins to unfold, begins to poke a hole in our pretensions, because there's evil that lurks in there. That evil devours you when you believe a lie, live a lie, especially when you don't know it's a lie. That's what Jesus said to the Pharisees, man, when the light that is in you is darkness, when what you think is light isn't light, that's incredibly dark. How do you get out of that? There's such bondage. So Jesus comes in his love for us and pokes a hole in our pretension. Now, here's where love's really critical. If I don't know I'm loved, and so I'm left to my own devices, I'm going to bandage that hole over and keep doing what I think is best. If I know I'm loved, and if I can somehow recognize God's fingerprints in this, the voice of the Jesus I love, and he's inviting me to something different, and I know that he's right about everything and big enough to care for me, even if I'm doing things that don't seem to be at the moment in my best interest. See, how I made this decision 25 years ago, I totally credit to grace. I didn't know God's love enough to walk away from that thing. I marvel. I look back going, God, you blinded me with grace or something, because I don't think I'm bright enough to have made that decision. But somehow, when he revealed that and opened that door, and my wife was on that page, and we leaned into that space, it was all beautiful, wonderful, and glorious. And so I leaned in. And that took us to a different road, the reputation thing. I could go on and on about so many things that when God speaks to us, the transition things, we're talking about, God, I want you to give it away. Now, I don't have to give it away. I never did. I could have held it, sold it, done whatever, but that would have been a different path. And I've made a lot of those mistakes. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, boy, I've always made the right decisions. There's times for years. There was one 2 years before that I felt like God asked me, if you resign your salary from this church you're at and keep going and serving as an elder, I'll take care of you. You don't need that income. I'll take care of you. And there was no place in my world to put that. And I chalked it up to, well, who doesn't want to be free and have their own money, win the lottery, do whatever, so I don't have to be responsible. And I totally explained that away. But I found out later that was Jesus inviting me. And I don't know how that would have changed what happened at Saviors, at the fellowship I was a part of, if my not being paid would have changed the quality of my voice, and maybe those that were trying to do it for their own devices might have discovered something they were missing. Might I have gone down that road there without having to be hurt 2 years later? I don't know. But I've missed these voices too. I'm not sitting here trying to tell you it's a perfect road, but I do know this. Where I have believed him, even where it was challenging, I have found life and doorways and opportunities that have taken me down the road I want to travel. And when I believed my own insights, my own devices, my own way of thinking ahead of that, that's where I've gotten lost. And so this is where I think the rubber meets the road in our journey in Christ. Let him poke at your pretensions. Don't resist it, as best you know. I mean, we're going to, because we're just not there yet. One of my favorite passages from the shack. And this is after Matt comes back from the cave, and he's sitting with Pop on the porch. And now, as Mac has found his way, instead of judging God and judging him at fault, He's come to embrace love at a deeper level and knows he's loved. Now he's sitting with Papa and he's not angry anymore. And he's recognizing, man, there's so many times when you've said things to me and I haven't done it. I haven't gone that road. This is what Jesus says in reply to him, what Papa says to him. Let's say, for example, I'm trying to teach you how not to hide inside of lies. Hypothetically, of course, she said with a wink. And let's say that I know it will take you 47 situations and events before you will actually hear me. That is before you will hear clearly enough to agree with me and follow. So when you don't hear me the first time, I'm not frustrated or disappointed. I'm thrilled. Only 46 more times to go. And the first time will be a building block to construct a bridge of healing that one day, that today, you will walk across it. I love that. All the times I said no to God was a building block to open the opportunity when on this day, I had enough of whatever it took to take the road he was inviting me down. I think there's an endless invitation. This is not, hey, the circumstance is coming right now. God's giving you a choice. The choice you make determines the entire outcome of your life. No, God's always coming. And I love the aspect of grace. It may take 47 times for us to come to this thing until, here's the language I love, until we build a bridge of trust enough for you to cross, because that's the essence of what believe is. It's to trust that my entire life is in his hands, that he has the best wisdom on everything. And as I lean into that reality, I get to embrace his glory. I get to be part of it unfolding in the world. But man, yes, this is the tough part, because none of us like having our pretensions poked with. It's what got Jesus into trouble, especially with those that didn't want his ways. But for those of us who do want his ways, maybe one of the things we pray is, Jesus, help me see where you're poking through my pretensions. Help me hold loosely the things I think are true so you can show me which are and which aren't. And when I can come join you in what is real, in that kingdom we talked about last week, then I get to have life in your name. And where I stay suckered into my lies, suckered into my pretensions, my illusions, because that's how this world has taught me to live, I'm going to miss it. And I don't want to miss it anymore.